Just Measures Radio is on the air.
All systems go.
Path has led you to the Tinker's Shop here on Just Measures Radio. I welcome you. Please come in, sit down, have a seat. We all must remember that we are the library for those who come after us, and we must share our knowledge with those who need it.
Take my love, take my land, take me where I can't stand. I don't care, I'm still free. You can't take the sky from me. Take me out to the black. Tell them I ain't coming back. Burn the land and boil the sea. You can't take the sky from me. I can be since I found serenity. You can't take the sky from me.
Well, good evening all to you, all my friends there in the chat room. Well, here it is. Same time, same place. 9 o'clock Central Time on JMR Radio. Welcome. So, such a week. Let's see here. I suppose I should probably go ahead and put the date in here. Today is the 3rd of May of 2014, 2 days after Beltane, among other holidays celebrated upon that day. So let me do this. I'll go ahead and do my usual. I'll put the link in the chat room. So we'll be going out to our usual place, out to www.arlen-tower.com/ with a capital T for Tinkers _ shop. So, okay, got that housekeeping out of the way. Yes, been quite a week. It was quite a good program that Concretin and Mother Earth had on Wednesday night. It's kind of a case of, I guess it's time for some of us to come out of the teepee. The Wiccans have been joking about coming out of the broom closet here the last few years, so maybe those of us who are the breeds, I'll use the semi-polite term for it. I was joking with my daughter about a different one that's used as a pejorative around here, and it's found in two ways. Starts out with either timber or woods, and it's got another totally non-PC word following it. Anyway. So, well, anyhow, if you're all out here at the Tinker Shop main page, probably noticed there's a few changes on it this week. I've started trying to dress it up here a little bit, but if you just go ahead and scroll down just a little bit on here, at the top of the usual grid I have, I actually have a kind of rearranged things a little bit here. It was suggested to me, I believe it was by Rights this last week, that I should probably try putting it in a most recent show at the top, so that's what I've done here. So tonight we're going to be talking about summer sausage and some other stuff. So go ahead and click on the link, and that should bring you out to a page that's called Summer Sausage. And actually, we're not going to only just be talking about summer sausage tonight, but also going to be talking a little bit about health preparedness, which, again, was kind of inspired by Edge of the Woods last night when he was talking from out at Schatz Ranch. And then, last but not least, gardening, because that's something that, well, it's that time of year. It's time. And this past week and a half, my older son has been doing a yeoman's job for me here. He's been busy getting the garden area tilled up and getting a bunch of stuff put in there. And so tomorrow we're going to finish putting up the fence around the new portion of the garden. The new 1,700 plus square feet that we're adding on. And then we're going to start getting some stuff plugged into the ground, finally. Okay. Well, first off here, I did have a request earlier this week from one of the people in the chat room to talk a little bit more about sausages and sausage making. So, first section here, it's I actually have three different kinds of homemade summer sausage that I can talk about. And again, probably just kind of go through highlights on it and point out the differences between them, rather than, you know, go completely through it line by line on the recipe, because that is probably fairly boring for people. But this first one here, this is it's a homemade summer sausage. You know, some people also call it a salami. And no, actually, I should probably say, all three forms of this sausage that I'm going to talk about, these are all what you could call a quick sausage. These are actually ones that a person can make in, believe it or not, an oven. But it's one way to kind of play around with the stuff and find how you like the flavors for different things. So, well, let me do this. This first one here, like I said, homemade summer sausage, a.k.a. salami. And if you look at that, you can see it's a fairly fine grind on that. And also, these, all three that I have here, actually don't use a casing. The way they're made is you get your spices mixed in, you leave it set in a cool area, refrigerator preferably, covered for anywhere from a day to 3 days. You take it out, you form it into basically a cylinder, and you bake them in the oven. So, okay, so what I'll do here is I'm just going to run basically through this first one, you know, hitting the high points, and then I'll go ahead and give the comparisons for the other two. Okay, so this first one here, this is an all-beef summer sausage. Uses 2 pounds of ground beef, a cup of water, half teaspoon liquid smoke, half teaspoon onion powder, basically half teaspoon of everything. Half teaspoon black pepper, garlic powder, mustard seeds, and then 2 tablespoons of a quick-curing salt. Or where I found this one, they suggested the Morton's Tender Quick. Again, the Morton's Tender Quick isn't meant for super long-term storage. Most summer sausages that people picture when you say, hey, you're going to make sausage, a lot of them think of it as being stuff that you can kind of hang up and leave there for, you know, a month, 2 months, whatever, unrefrigerated. If you use the Tender Quick curing salt, that doesn't have enough nitrates and nitrites in it to for long-term storage, but it does cure the meat. It does leave the color, you know, so it's more of a reddish color. Otherwise, you know, if you bake a loaf of ground beef in the oven, you know, after it gets through cooking or whatever, it's brown all the way through. Whereas with the Tender Quick, it helps retain the nice pink color. Okay, so like I said, I'm just going to run through these, you know, directions quickly. And like I had here, this is a very basic summer sausage which you can prepare in an oven. First step is to mix together all your ingredients in a non-metal bowl. You know, again, metal bowls are great, except for the fact you can pick up a metallic taste off of them. And it's what you can do is you mix all your, basically all your seasonings in with that cup of water first. And so it's all dissolved. Then you can go ahead and just you know, basically add it to your ground beef. You work it in with your hands, like, you know, mush it around good, stir it all together. And then with this, the second step is to cover the bowl and you refrigerate it for 24 hours. That allows the spices to completely rehydrate in the water and the juices from the beef. And it lets the spices, once they've rehydrated, it allows the flavors of them to permeate through. After 24 hours, you just, you know, you take the bowl out of the refrigerator, get out like a breadboard or whatever, break it into four parts, roll it into a cylinder about an inch and a half to 2 inches in diameter. Then you wrap them in tin foil with the shiny side in, because the shiny side just seems to, it leaves a smoother surface, plus the dull side, if it's out, that helps absorb heat. Once you have them all wrapped, then you punch a bunch of little teeny holes along, you know, full length on it, all the way down, and you put it like on a broiler pan or a roasting rack, whole sides down, and you bake it in an oven at 325 degrees for about an hour and a half. Once the time's up, you bring it out, you know, remove the foil, and like I have here, you know, rewrap in plastic wrap, and you can either, you know, refrigerate it or freeze it. Actually, most of the time when I've done, you know, quick sausage like this, only about 3/4 of it makes it to the refrigerator or freezer. Reason for that is I'm usually starting to cut on the first one and enjoying it. And these can be, you know, you can vary the recipes just slightly, basically adjusting the flavors to taste. Sorry about that. Had to hit the cough button. Okay, so, you know, like I said, that's, you know, a fairly quick and easy sausage. And let me do this. I'm going to take a quick peek here in the chat room just to see if anybody had anything. Oh, I see Pumpkin's asking if this is an archive. Nope. At least I think I'm still alive. So, okay. I just, like I said, I figured I'd go ahead here and just kind of take a quick peek, and hopefully everybody can hear me okay. So, next one down here in the list is a venison summer sausage. You know, like I said, the first one was just straight beef, you know, ground beef from the butcher shop. This one here, it's a slightly larger batch. This calls for 5 pounds of ground venison. Again, same 2 tablespoons of a cure. 2 teaspoons of mustard seed. Remember, the last one only had a half a teaspoon. That was for 2 pounds. Well, this is, you know, more than twice as large, but you're using 4 times as much mustard seed, so it'll give more of a mustard flavor. Again, it's saying 2.5 teaspoons of garlic salt. If you wanted to and wanted a little less salty, you could just use garlic powder. Or you could use 2.5 teaspoons of garlic powder and then throw in, you know, maybe 1/2 teaspoon of regular salt. And again, the black pepper is a higher quantity, and the liquid smoke flavoring. This one here, even though this is, you know, 2.5 times larger as the first batch, this is only using twice as much. Again, you know, you can, like I said, you can adjust and play with the flavoring agents in your sausage. This will allow you to find your perfect summer sausage. Okay, so this one here, again, you know, basically the directions are very similar. get your ground meat in a bowl, put in your curing mixture, your mustard seed, garlic, and basically all the other ingredients. You mix it well. This one here begins to, it says that you should only do it for about 2 minutes, because if venison has a slightly different texture than beef. You know, it'll have less fat, so you want to not, I guess you could say, maul it as badly as beef gets. Okay, then, next step, step three. Remember the other one said 24 hours? Well, for venison, it was suggested to refrigerate it for a full 3 days. And then you go ahead, and it's, the steps after this are fairly similar, except that you use a 200-degree oven for this. It's a lower temperature. It's still above the, you know, recommended 160. 1 second here. Yep, had to utilize my cough button again there. Let's see, where was I? Oh, yes. With this here, you cook this at 200 degrees. It still gets you above the 160 degrees, which is recommended for all meats, you know, to kill any parasites that might possibly be in it. So, and again, in this case, the venison sausage, they're saying to break it into five pieces. So, in other words, you'd end up with, you know, a 1 pound stick of venison sausage. And again, it's basically the same sort of thing. Break it into five pieces, each one, basically take and roll it into, you know, a log that's, you know, 1.5 to 2 inches diameter. And again, you wrap it in aluminum foil, shiny side in, and then what you do is you bake it in the oven, you know, for this can be, you know, anywhere from 6 to 8 hours long. It takes longer, you know, because the temperature is lower. And again, you probably won't need to be poking any holes in it, because again, venison is very lean, whereas beef, most of the time these days, are running anywhere from 23% fat on down to, you know, 5% if you just get, you know, extremely lean beef. Whereas with venison, it's a heck of a lot leaner than beef ever will think of being. And again, like I said, you can, cook it in the oven for, you know, the desired time period. And again, you want to get it to a center temperature on it, 160 degrees Fahrenheit. And then, again, you can cool it and wrap them and either freeze or refrigerate. And you're ready to go. Okay, what do we got here? 22 after. Okay, so I think we have enough time here. And I'll run through this last one. And again, as I got down here, went through these, you know, the directions got shorter, because I figured by the time I get to the end here, you could probably almost repeat them back to me. And again, this one here is for a homemade beef pepperoni, or, you know, I could have put / summer sausage. This is a pretty, shall we say, lightweight seasoned pepperoni. It's more of a spiced summer sausage. And again, 5 pounds of lean ground beef. This one here, though, uses 5 heaping teaspoons of Morton's Tender Quick. The other ones, the venison one used 2 tablespoons, which is basically 6 teaspoons. So you have a slightly less amount of Tender Quick in here. And again, this again has more mustard, but this one uses 2.5 teaspoons of mustard seed. This can either be, you know, ground or left whole. If you're going to be going for more of a pepperoni type thing, you'd want to grind it, you know, quite fine. Uses a teaspoon of ground pepper, 2.5 teaspoons of garlic salt, 1/2 teaspoon of cayenne powder. And now I'll go ahead and talk about the ingredients a little bit before I go ahead with the directions. Generally, pepperoni is, you know, fairly close to a summer sausage. But the big difference with pepperoni is that it's a lot spicier. So you could actually go ahead and do things like, say, add, say, for a batch of this size, I would say you could probably get away with putting in, like, say, a teaspoon or so of paprika, a hot paprika. And you could also up the cayenne pepper. And if you really like garlic, you could always add a little bit extra garlic powder to it as well, and which would, again, bring it more towards the pepperoni side, you know, spicier. And again, the ingredients, you know, basically, day one, you mix all your ingredients, you know, mush them all up really good. Day two, you mix it up one more time, and you know, continue to refrigerate. Should probably mention here too, remember, or notice, this did not use any extra added water. So you're going to end up with a drier sausage, which is what you want to have, especially if you're going to have like a pepperoni. Okay, so then again, you form the meat into four rolls. This time, you know, for it'd be like 1.25 pounds a piece. If you're thinking of using it as more of as a pepperoni, you might actually want to, you know, perhaps divide it into 5 parts and then roll the sausage, you know, smaller diameter. And again, you put it onto a grill rack, you know, on a cookie sheet so the fat can drip off, and you bake it for 7 hours at 150 degrees. And then, you know, every 2 hours, roughly, go ahead and just kind of give them an eighth of a turn. Just basically slowly rotating them over. So, okay, so with all those, like I said, these are all a quick summer sausage that, you know, as soon as they cool off, you could actually, you know, slice it and start enjoying it. And obviously, you know, the extra ones you'll want to wrap up and either keep in the refrigerator so they stay good and cool, or, you know, wrap them in securely and, you know, get as much air out of your package as you can, and then you can freeze them. And, yeah, I'll go ahead and mention this as well. Like I said, these are quick ones, which basically are just, you know, roasted in the oven. And if a person would want to get fancy, you could actually take these same recipes and stuff them into, you know, summer sausage tubes. And yes, I see it's not real gut. You can get real gut to do summer sausage in, but you can also get the what they call fibrous tubes, which is basically an artificial casing. You know, it's basically the rind or whatever, the skin that you peel off when you slice summer sausage. You could actually stuff it into these tubes, seal them, and then you could either do them in the oven, or if you're feeling adventurous and have a smoker, you can always hang them in a smoker and you know, follow the smoking instructions as close as you can. But again, because of the seasoning that's used in this, I would still say you don't want to keep it for a real long time, because it isn't as, shall we say, highly cured as a summer sausage that you normally would want to make. Okay, so we've got here almost at the bottom of the hour, so I think perhaps what I should do is I'll go ahead and get a commercial in here. And then I'm going to follow it up with a piece of music that Mother Earth and Conk have kind of inspired me to do. Like I said, kind of coming out of the teepee. So, please enjoy.
Hurricanes, tornadoes, western firestorms, earthquakes, financial collapse, government upheaval. What happens when the world closes? Whom do you turn to? You turn to Cat Ellis and myself, Chuck Hudson, on a Medi-Chat and learn how combat medicine and alternative herbal remedies can help keep you going no matter what. Medi-Chat, live 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern on the Just Makers Radio Network.
Done by a gentleman by the name of Ed Drury, and the name of it was Dancing Crow. You know, it was a little bit more of the bamboo flute and drums. Hopefully I didn't drive a lot of people away with that. Okay, so on to the next section here tonight. Like I said, tonight's kind of a miscellany or a grab bag. It's things that were kind of inspired by the other discussions this week in the chat room. And so this next section I just have, you know, here is just called it Home and Personal Health Preparedness. First thing that you know, I figured I'd cover is colloidal silver. You know, being such that we've got the getting the camel jumper version of a virus over here. And actually a colloidal silver generator is not that difficult to build. And, you know, I just got some pictures in here. This is just, you know, like I said, fairly simple to do. Use 3 9-volt batteries, a 9-volt, I guess you call it snap connector or tapper for batteries. Actually, you need three of them. A clear soda bottle, you know, roughly, you know, one of the ones that say about a 12-ouncer. Yeah, two pure silver wires, and those are available from Culp, you know, from Southwest Shooting Authority. That's where I got mine from. And some tape. And you can kind of see the setup I had. If you look close at the photo here, you know, got one battery sitting out front here, not connected to the connector. Goes back, and like I said, it uses three of the connectors, and they're just basically wired to be in a daisy chain. So you basically connect, you know, red to black, and on the other side you have a red and a black that are free. You go from that point as you take the silver wire, you bend it over to like a 90 degree, and you crimp the two spare ends in, you know, one on each silver wire. And then what happens is you can cut two real tiny little slits, you know, smaller the slit, the better. You slide your silver contacts down into the jar until it hits the bottom. Then you can just take some tape. This particular one I just did use a piece of duct tape just to, you know, hold the protruding part of the silver wire up tight against the outside of the bottle, which would force the bottom ends to the outside. At that point you fill the bottle, you know, obviously below where you got the slits in the bottle, but you fill it up with filtered or distilled water. Don't put any salt in. You don't want that. But you just fill it up to that point. Put your cap on, and you connect all three of your batteries in. And so that's basically it. You leave it cook for about 15 or 20 minutes. You know, you'll start getting bubbles off of it, and it works from there. So I'll tell you what I'm going to do here. Since I hear some noise here in the background, I'm going to go ahead and put another little piece of music in, and I'll be right back. Son just got back from going to a movie this evening. So, anyhow, like I was saying, the colloidal silver is, you know, very easy to produce, and it's fairly effective. So, okay, so next item down here, elderberry extract. Again, you know, a lot of people go, oh, that's pretty hard to make. Not really. What you need to do for making it, And basically here in this section, you can basically see it. Need an empty quart jar with a lid, dried elderberries, and either vodka or pure grain alcohol. And what you do is you get the jar filled between about a quarter of the jar with dried elderberries. If you're using vodka, you just basically fill the jar up. Leave inch or two at the top so you got some room to slosh it around. Or if you're using Everclear pure grain alcohol, you have to mix that one part of the pure grain alcohol to two parts of water. So generally what I'll do is I'll grab a large glass, something like, well, I shouldn't say large glass, large juice glass, something that's about, say, 4 ounces, and I'll start putting it in, one glass full of Everclear, 2 glasses of water, and until I get to the top, and at that point, lid goes on, you shake it up, every day, once or twice a day, whenever you think of it, for about 3 weeks to a month. At that point, you go ahead, strain it off, press the berries out as you're going. By the way, if you're going to press them with your hands, put some nitrile gloves on. Otherwise, you're going to have some really beautifully purple-tinted fingers. But again, the strength that you come out with is, you go for a prophylactic dose of it, one or two teaspoons a day, and if you think you're coming down with something, up into a tablespoon a couple times a day. Again, like I said, not rocket science, not brain surgery, it's just pretty much straightforward. And then for our last section here of generalized personal preparedness, again, this is just basically pictures and things that, what with the news about the MERS virus, turns out that it was up in northwest Indiana, which is kind of getting closer to my home turf up here. So that's going to bear some watching. But if this thing does get started and starts spreading, might not be a bad idea to have some N95 masks around, some nitrile gloves, and some sort of hand sanitizers. And again, this is just a picture of one of the 3M brands of N95 mask. And again, got kind of just a generalized description here of it. Like I have here, face masks, you can get those too. Or with the N95 respirators, you should not share them with anybody. And, if there are, viruses or bacteria around, and it's in the air, this is going to, basically block them. So I would say they're pretty much, a one-use item. And good example is when I worked for the mold remediation company. My boss would tell me before I'd enter a new building the first time that he wanted me to put a brand new mask on and leave that thing on as long as I was in the building, and if I had to come outside, for either to, dry my feet or warm up or to get something else, that old mask had, it should come off, be stuffed into a garbage bag I kept in the back of my vehicle, and I'd put on a new one before I go back in. And I worked for them for about 2 years, around an awful lot of black molds and a bunch of other nasty stuff, and knock on wood, I don't think I took any damage, at least from that stuff. And right now, these N95 masks from 3M, they're running roughly $19 for a 10-pack. It's not too bad. You might say it's a pretty cheap life insurance policy. again, next thing down, something that's kind of handy to have is some nitrile gloves. You know, these are just the lightweight blue. They're like 4 mil plastic. And again, you know, if you're in some place where there's possibility of contamination with viruses or something else that's nasty, you know, use a pair. Yeah, they look funny. They're bright blue. So what? I'd rather look a little silly and with blue hands than end up coming down with something. You know, get it on your hands, rub your eye. Whoops, there you go. Got your virus or your bacteria. And again, pretty cheap. They're like, you know, again, price I looked up today, they were $8.85 for a box of 100. They're, you know, the gloves aren't matched left hand, right handed. They're all the same. And they just, you know, stretch to fit. And, okay, last thing of the set of stuff is a hand sanitizer. This is, a Purell, hand sanitizer. You know, this particular one, it's a liter bottle, runs $9.99. And again, it's a good thing to wipe down with. You know, if someone, you know, coughs on your arm or whatever, might want to think about, you know, wiping down with this stuff to help sanitize somewhat. Obviously, it's not going to work as good as some of the stuff that Edge of the Woods has talked about. He's talked about using HipaCleanse. But this, for the average, everyday use, should be able to get you through. So, okay, so that's that portion. And now, what I'm going to do is, I'm going to put one more piece of music in here, and then I'm just going to go ahead and talk a little bit about some survival gardening. So let me do this. By the way, that last piece of music, that was done by the Ceresco String Band or the Ceresco Prairie Band. You know, they go by both names. Yeah, the fiddler for that is my fine lady wife. So here's another one that they did. And I'm just going to let this whole one play. And then after that, come back and talk a little bit about gardens.
Thank you.
that one came up quicker than I expected. Yeah, like I said, that's the Ceresco Prairie Band, also known as the Ceresco String Band. They started going with Prairie Band after they had a couple people join them that, well, one guy plays accordion, and there's a couple people who play flutes or fifes. So they could no longer call themselves just the String Band. And they've been playing music now. Oh, what is it? It's going on, I think it's 9 years, maybe 10. And it's basically a bunch of the people from up here at the college where my wife works at. There's three or four of the professors who are in the band. There's my wife, who's faculty secretary / den mother for a couple buildings. And then there's a couple of other people from in the community that play instruments that join them on occasion. So they have fun with it. And actually, I have finally talked her into bringing home a bunch of the music, so I actually got some of it transferred here to the computer. So those I can play with no qualms whatsoever, because I have permission from the artists to play their stuff. All right. Okay, so now I suppose I should probably next jump back over and hit the last section, because our time's creeping away. I admitted that I got going a few minutes late tonight because of a few technical problems, so I think I'll probably just go ahead a few minutes extra and tonight, and so it just rounds it off to a nice even hour. So, gardens. Again, if things go all totally to crap, and even if they don't, you know, with the inflation that we're looking at probably getting this year, every little bit of money that one can save, it's that much more year ahead. And if you got the space to do gardens, do one. They're not difficult at all to do. And this year I just basically kind of broke it down into four areas. You know, root crops, above ground crops, tree crops, and berries. I know there's other things. This is not an all-inclusive list. But, well, to be truthful, most of these things in the root crops and above ground crops, we are actually putting in this year. So, you know, what I got here, you know, root crops, you know, all, you know, pretty easy to do. Potatoes, and I'm actually doing five different varieties of potatoes this year that are being planted in the ground. I'm also working on an alternative method that I've heard about, where you take like roughly a 30-liter pot, which would be, what, roughly 6 gallons, maybe a little bit more. The 30-liter pot, what you do is you get the little plastic, like tree planting buckets. They'll have like a little bitty mouse hole around the bottom. They'll have like, you know, five or six of them. Take and enlarge those just a hair. Put about 2 inches of compost, 3 inches of compost in the bottom of the bucket. Throw in a handful of a general fertilizer. I know normally I'm not a big fertilizer fan, but since I'm trying to duplicate somebody else's results, I'm going to try it this way, his way. But throw in a, you know, handful of fertilizer, mix it in there real good, smooth it out, and you set your potato sets in there, three of them, anywhere from 3 to 4 potato sets, just in from the edge of the bucket, equally spaced around there. Cut side down, put about another 3 inches of just plain compost on top, and, you know, do the usual watering on there. When your plants come up out of the compost, when they get about, say, 3 or 4 inches high, start putting more compost in. You know, build it up around there. Basically, what you're doing is filling them up inside of a bucket. And keep doing that as the plants grow up. You mulch them up. And, you know, when you get just the bucket just about full, at that point, leave it alone. Just, you know, watered as needed until the vines start dying back. Like I said, I'm trying to duplicate the experiment someone else did. He actually had a 5-foot square area. He had like 8 or 9 buckets in there. And out of that 5-foot square area, he managed to harvest over 100 pounds of potatoes. Like I said, I'm just trying that just to see if I can duplicate the same sort of effects. And also I'll be able to try different kinds of potatoes in these just to see which ones work better in that sort of environment. Another thing to plant, carrots. Carrots are really good for you. I know, a lot of people hate them. Other people just like them for salads. Some people like to juice them. Carrots are really high in beta-carotene. And I've had my nose rubbed in it this year that that's something that I should have been eating a lot more of along the way. The beta-carotene is good for support for your eyes. Yeah, that's something that we're all going to need. And if things get too weird, you might need one eye for sighting. Next thing down, red beets. A lot of people around the world eat those. A lot of people in the Slavic countries, they take that red beets and cabbage and make borscht. Makes a good filling meal. Sugar beets. It's one I'm also going to be trying this year. Sugar beets, when they're mature, they are approximately 20% by weight sugar. And so I'm going to be, this fall, hopefully I'll be getting some decent sugar beets that I can play around with, and I'll go ahead and see if I can make up some, basically some beet syrup. You know, people have, around here they do a lot of tapping of maple trees and getting maple syrup and cooking it down, which basically gives kind of a smoky flavor to it. I'm going to try the same thing, only with beets. I'll extract the sugar from them and cook it down the same way. So that'll be a report for this fall on how that turned out. Couple more items, root crops, parsnips and turnips. Again, a lot of people around the world have eaten those, and they're used in a lot of foods. And so far, every last one of these things is stuff that I'm doing in the garden this year. Next, onions. Onion sets are cheap. Onions will add a lot of flavor to your foods. And I'm doing red, white, and yellow onions. So, again, we'll see how those do. And last of the root crops I managed to think of when I was putting this list together is garlic. Actually, it's a bulb. And my garlic, which I planted this last fall, it's doing quite well. I've got some shoots that are coming up that are about 8.5 or 9 inches tall already this year. So I'm looking forward to a good garlic crop. Okay, so going over to above ground crops. Again, this is not an all-inclusive list. Majority of these things are actually things that are going into our garden this year. Beans. We're going to have probably, well, I know I'm going to be doing my my variant on a green bean, it's a snap bean. I'll be doing yellow wax beans. I probably will be doing some of the, I can't think of the name, Hidatha. It's an Indian bean. And also I'm going to be doing some garbanzos this year. That's my experimental bean crop this year. The pole beans, actually, those, if they're allowed to dry in the vine, they make a extremely good soup bean. The next thing down, peas. Again, we do a couple different varieties. We do an edible pod pea. Also, I use one that's called the Alaska pea. It was originally developed for growing in Alaska, you know, where they have a little bit shorter growing season in some areas. Of course, they get sunlight for a lot longer, too, during those same time periods, but it's a fairly fast-growing pea. It's, you know, a fairly short season one. They're very prolific. Next down, leeks. Again, We usually do, you know, a bunch of leeks every year just to have for doing a leek and potato soup. Okay. Next one, tomatoes. This year I'm doing 5 different varieties of tomatoes. A couple paste ones and a couple unusual ones. You know, basically they're kind of an unusual. One's that stays completely bright green, and then I have another one that's a yellow one. And then I've got one that's called Black Sea Man. And it's, again, it's a dark tomato. Outside it looks similar to a Cherokee Purple, which is also going in. And so we'll see what we get out of those. Peppers. Got about 4 different varieties of peppers started. Yeah, 2 of the varieties have sprouted already and are growing nicely. The other ones are just starting to disturb the soil and starting to come up. Okay, next, squash. We'll probably be doing good old-fashioned acorn squash, butternut squash, and this year my wife has requested spaghetti squash. So we'll see how those do. As a matter of fact, the spaghetti squashes, they're about 9 inches tall. I've got to get them moved out of my office here and into some much larger pots and get them in the soil. Okay, spinach. Everybody knows spinach. Lettuce, chard, you know, all good ones that, you know, can either be eaten fresh in salads, put them on, you know, a burger or whatever, or even steamed and eaten that way. Asparagus. Our asparagus is starting to come up, and again, I'm planning on expanding the asparagus bed again this year. And then last 3 years, some of the cabbage family ones, broccoli, cauliflower, and cabbage. The broccoli, actually, it's from seed that I saved from the plants from last year, and they seem to be doing pretty good. Cabbages, I'll be doing the usual, the usual small round cabbages, you know, stuff that's a little bit shorter growing season one. And again, had a special request for, Michelini? It's basically like a Napa or a Chinese cabbage. Again, works really good. So, and I know there's other veggies out there. I'm sure Conk has probably been saying, okra, okra. And, yep. Oh, yes, pumpkin, yes. The sugar beet seeds. These are actually some sugar beet seeds that I picked up, I'd say about 6 or 7 years ago from a feed store that had got them in for planting as, how'd you call it, as a bait crop for deer. And I actually made a point of checking with the people and says, okay, GMO or not? And the guy says, no, this is not GMO stuff. This is just good old-fashioned straight, you know, sugar beets. And so I bought, I think it was 2.5 pounds. And broke it up in smaller packages and kept half of it down in the basement where it was cool and dark, and the other half was stashed down in the freezer. You know, kind of kept in the middle so it'd stay frozen. So, yes, I like that. And I've been, last year I tried planting some. Unfortunately, I didn't have the proper assistance, and instead of getting them watered, the people let them sit in the sun and didn't water them. So they died on me. So, yes, things under, again, from the chat room, I see Doc asked about leeks. Yes. I do a bunch of leeks every year. I love them. And let's see, kale. Yep, that's another one. My wife has been talking about that, and so I told her, well, she needs to get some seeds for it. And zucchini, of course. That's a given. I didn't mention it. Sorry. But yeah, that's also going in. So, like I said, we have lots of garden space here. I checked it out and kind of measured off quick last year, and counting with what we've got now that we finally finished prepping and preparing, last year we had about 5,500 roughly. This year we're probably up to about 5,700 or 5,800 square feet. It's probably bigger than some people's lots that they live on. I know it's bigger than a lot of people's houses. It's bigger than my house. What can I say? So, and let's see. Well, since I'm kind of really running out of time quick here, I'll just run through the rest of these. Tree crops. Again, if you have an area where you've been at for some time and you've got your own homestead, I hope you got apples in there, pears, cherries, peaches. Apples and pears are really easy to grow. They'll grow almost anywhere in this country. Cherries are a little bit more iffy, but again, if I can grow them here in central Wisconsin, most people should be able to grow them in their areas, unless, I'm not sure, maybe out in Idaho or Montana, you might have a little bit more of a difficult time. Peaches, same thing. When I planted my peach trees here, people are just telling me they're not going to grow and they're not going to get any fruit. Well, the funniest thing is the last 3-4 years, we've been getting about a half a bushel or so off of the one tree. The reason I say only a half a bushel is because the deer keep getting at the other low ones. Still haven't figured out how to keep those things away. I've tried milorganite and fertilizer and human hair around the tree, and they just kind of ignore that and go for the fruit anyway. Okay, other things for tree crops. Again, these are probably going to have to be mostly foraged for, but hickory nuts, you know, the shagbark hickory, that's getting pretty rare around the country, but I still do see them around here on occasion. And when I see one, I usually try and make a mental note of where it's at, and I try getting out there in the fall before the squirrels and the other hickory nut fans, you know, before they can get to them. I try and get to them. Let's see, walnuts. Again, you know, you can get walnuts around. They're a lot rarer, but they can be found. Black walnuts, they're common as weeds around here. Of course, they're a mess to get the hulls off and get the nuts out, but if you can get them out, they taste great. And acorns. Again, my ancestors, I guess you could say, are the First Nations people. They harvested the acorns. Some of them are more bitter than others, but still you have to basically shell them out, blanch them with hot water, and actually somewhat cook them to get the tannic acid out. After that, once they're cleaned out from the tannic acid, they can be dried, ground for flour, porridge, you know, whatever. Okay, and last but not least are berries. Again, we don't have all of these, but we've got several. We've got our place here, we've got strawberries, blackberries, red and black, strawberries, blackberries, red and black raspberries. There's a difference between a black raspberry and a blackberry. Black raspberries are generally smaller. The blackberries, you know, big as the last joint on my little finger, or maybe even the last joint on my index finger. You know, some of them get pretty darn big. Grapes. I actually have 3 varieties of grapes here. This year I'm hoping to finally get something off of them. They've been planted for several years now and still haven't done much. It's possible to find wild grapes in the area, which actually I have found a good-sized patch, and spoke to the owner, and he's like, yeah, fine. Take them all of them you want. You know, he figures they're just a mess. So, guess who's going to have some wild grape wine this fall? That is if the berries make it. Gooseberries. Actually, gooseberries, believe it or not, are a relative... Well, actually, they are a kiwi fruit. But The kiwi fruit is nothing more than an oversized and fuzzy gooseberry. And of course, again, I don't have these yet. I've been trying to find a local source for elderberry bushes so I can get them started and not have to wait several years for them to bear. And again, last but not least, and I know there's other berries, but you have blueberries, which again are, well, actually they're pretty darn good for you. I'm not crazy for the flavor, but I've been known to have some blueberry juice on occasion just for the health benefits. Okay, so, well, I've definitely gone over an hour. It's almost 10 past 10. So I think what I should probably do is maybe put one more piece of music in here, and then I'll segue my way on out. So, again, thank you very much for joining me here in the Tinker Shop for Saturday, the 3rd of May of 2014. Take care this week, and God bless. And as Mother Earth says, you know, keep all of our boys with boots on the ground, and all the ladies whose boots are on the ground as well. Keep them in your prayers, okay? So, take care. And I think I'll just go ahead and play a little music here and segue my way out. So, have a good time. Bye-bye.
the blood of leaping high as the spirits of the old Highland men. Towering in gallant fame, Scotland, the mountain hame, I may a proud standard gloriously wave. Land of my high endeavor, land of the shining river, land of my heart forever, Scotland brave. High in the misty highlands, out by the purple light, as brave are the hearts that beat beneath Scottish skies. Wild are the winds that reach you, Scotch are the friends that greet you, kind as the love that shines from fair maiden's eyes. Towering in gallant fame, Scotland, the mountain hame, high lay a proud standard gloriously wave. Land of my high endeavor, land of the shining river, land of my heart forever, Scotland brave.
Confusion, I can't get no relief.